What's up, Internet? You're tuning in episode 16 of the Pottscast. I'm your host, Pete and Bessie, joined as always by Mr. Stephen Radford.
Hello, Pete.
And Pixelpar.
I'm back. I'm actually back for the podcast. What, podcast? I can't even say podcast.
I don't even remember the name of the show anymore.
Where am I?
On this week's show, we're going to be talking about Switch firmware version 7.0, Piranha Plant joining the battle, and the delay of Metroid Prime 4. So, Pixel, you're back.
I am back. I'm here to talk about video games again.
We were concerned, man. It's like 2 weeks in a row that you had to bail out on the show. You know, we were thinking that you listened to, you know, the Pottscast After Dark episode and that you're just like, you know what? I'm done with this show. I'm done with these guys.
It's just every now and again, I just have to have a break away from you, Pete. It just needs to happen so I can stay sane.
Oh my god, that episode was crazy though.
You did like, waffle on.
Me and Pete doing English and American accents.
You transformed it from a video game podcast to like your own personal let's just talk about anything.
What you didn't know is after we got off that call for about 2 more hours, we were talking about politics and all sorts of stuff. Like we were just here chatting about like God knows what.
Just life.
Glad I didn't hear the unedited version.
But you know what I think is my favorite thing is Pixel's been developing this element of his character where he just shits on me. And then, but then like literally, just now he goes, oh, I need to get away from you, Pete. Not you and Steve, just me. And on Twitter, when he tweeted out that nice thing about how he appreciates the whole team, I was like, oh, it's so nice to be a part of it. He's like, oh, I didn't mean to tag you. Sorry. Genuine accident. But my favorite part is that to pull back the curtain on how nice Pixel actually is, both times he's done that, immediately afterwards he's been like, oh, I'm sending you a gift. Gave me a nice Undertale theme for my PlayStation 4. Sent me some amiibo. So you know what, man? Keep making fun of me if it means I get presents.
It's just convenient timing, that's all.
So we're going to kick the show off the way we sometimes do by talking about what we're playing, Pixel, since you've been gone. What you been up to?
So I've been playing one game that I can't talk about yet, which is annoying.
Ooh.
And that's the Toe Jam and Earl game coming to Switch in February.
Very cool.
So I've been playing that, and I'll probably talk about that in a couple of weeks. But aside from that, the Super Rare Games team sent me a bunch of physical games to play, which was really nice of them. And the one I've started playing is called Adventure Pals, and it's really fun. I've only just started playing it. I'm only like 15 minutes into it, really. But it's really, really fun. And it's like a platformer. You're a kid and it's your birthday and you follow your dad, or papa as he's called in the game, to go get your birthday cake, and you have to blow up your birthday cake, and inside the birthday cake is a giraffe, as you do.
What the hell?
And so you get a giraffe for your birthday and he goes in your backpack and he comes along with you, and he's kind of like, you know, like a Banjo-Kazooie style thing?
Yeah.
He's a Kazooie to your banjo.
This sounds like a Mad Lib.
Yeah, it's a very comical game. Your dad then gets turned into a hot dog, as all the old people do. And then it's your quest to go save your dad and turn him back from a hot dog into a person.
What is this game about? This is the craziest.
Bear in mind, I've been playing this for 15 minutes. That all happened within like the first
That's
15
the first
minutes.
15 minutes? That's insane.
But yeah, no, I'm definitely going to keep playing that. And it's also two-player, so I'm interested to try out the two-player aspect to it.
Which other games did they send you?
I got N++.
Oh, cool. That's a great game.
Snake Pass, which I'm really excited to try.
Yes, I love Snake Pass.
And Mutant Muds. I haven't played that yet either, so I'm looking forward to that one.
And we spoke about it yesterday, the space game that we couldn't remember the title of.
That space game?
Yeah.
That's about space. And some other games that I can't remember. So the ones I was really excited about was Adventure Pals, Mutant Muds, and Snake Pass.
Yeah, when you tweeted it out, I was like, I really want you to play Adventure Pals so you can tell me what it's like, because I've had my eye on it for a while. Visually, it looks really cool, I think.
I nearly bought a copy. I was like eyeing it up for ages, like, should I get it? Should I get it? And I was like, oh, and then I went to go get it, and they're out of stock.
You posted that they come with like little collector cards. Are they all like related to the game, or are they all kind of part of one collection?
So you get the game as kind of as you normally would get a Switch game, you know, factory wrapped, all that kind of stuff. And then that's inside another plastic film thing. And inside there you get a pack of trading cards, which is specific to that game. So say you buy the Adventure Pals, you'll get free random cards that feature Adventure Pals items or characters.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think there's 5 to collect. So if you buy the game, you can't actually get all the cards.
So you have to buy multiple copies, is what you're saying?
You can buy the trading packs separately, or you can trade with other people that bought the game, I guess.
Okay, that's quite cool.
So there's that, and then you get a sticker, a super rare game sticker, and it's themed like whatever game you get.
Oh, that's cool. I used to do a, a mystery box, you know, like loot crate or whatever. There was one that was, and I think it still exists, it's called the Indie Box. And you'd get, like, a random indie game every month, but it would come, like, in a, like, old-school computer game, like, you know, one of those soft boxes, and, like, inside, it would have, like, a hard drive with the game on it, but then there'd also be, like, a Steam code and, like, a bunch of, like, swag. So it sounds like a pretty similar thing, and, like, that was something that they would always do. Like, you'd get a indie box sticker that had, like, characters or, like, the font or whatever from the game that month. Very cool.
The one pack I really wanted to get was a limited run game release of Thimbleweed Park. They did a similar thing. It was like a big box PC-style game. Came with a floppy disk, and each floppy disk had something different on
it. That's so great.
It was so cool and like really fit the era of like the LucasArts-style games. But the shipping for limited run games just kills me every time I go to buy something from there. I'm just like, nope, I'm not spending $30 on shipping.
I do exactly the same thing. That's why Super Rare Games is better for me, because they're UK based, so you don't have to pay import tax, crazy shipping, all that kind of stuff. But they don't do like the limited box sets, you know, like the collector's fancy box, loads of extras collection. They always do the game with a trading card and a sticker, so you can't get any of that super fancy stuff.
So Steve, what about you?
I've been playing a game called Piku Niku. I think that's how you pronounce it. Have either of you seen this?
I've heard a lot of buzz about it, but I haven't really, like, I have no concept of what it looks like.
It's like a really, have you ever seen the game Loco Roco, or played the game Loco Roco?
It was originally
a PSP game, then it came to the PS4 as a remaster. And visually, it reminds me of that a lot. It's like a very flat aesthetic.
Okay.
Big use of primary colors. It's really cool looking. And the concept of the game is you play this beast who awakens in a cave and like kind of ventures out. And the first village you come to, everyone's scared of you and locks you up. But then they realize you're just a tiny little thing. And how could you possibly be a beast? You're not scary at all. But the real story is kind of like a take on capitalism ruining the world. There's this company called Sunshine Incorporated who is claiming to buy everyone's junk and give them free coins. But rather than buying the junk, they're basically sucking all the resources out of each of the village. So the first village, they're taking up all the corn, so the people have nothing to eat. And the second village are people that live in trees, but they're cutting down all the trees, so they've got nowhere to live. And so your kind of job as this beast character is to take down Sunshine Incorporated and defeat them. So I'm about halfway through the game. There's a really cool visual style, some really cool gameplay mechanics, both platforming and just like loads of different mini games and puzzles and things like that that you do. You can find these trophies throughout the game, some of which I really want to turn into like amiibos. I really hope Nintendo that pulls like a Shovel Knight and does like an indie game amiibo for this game, because I think it would be really cool.
Hey man, we never got Snipperclips amiibo, so.
No, I know, and that's a bloody Nintendo game.
Do you know what's interesting though? From my understanding, based on a book we talked about last week, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, the only reason the Shovel Knight amiibo exists is because one of the, like, 5 Yacht Club employees just, like, emailed their Nintendo rep, like, every month and was like, hey, can we have an amiibo? Hey, can we have an amiibo? And eventually they were just like, fine!
That's amazing.
But it's not it wouldn't be the first, like, third-party amiibo we've had this generation. Like, we've just got the Diablo 3 one, so there's precedent there. Hopefully Nintendo does it for more indie games like they did with Shovel Knight, but Shovel Knight's kind of an exception because it was ginormous. But it's a really cool game. I love the soundtrack. I ended up buying the soundtrack on Bandcamp, but the guy that did it, also did the music for Snipperclips, which was quite interesting to see. And it's like a really cool cutesy vibe to it, and the trailer for the game is incredible. It's like an Aardman style claymation kind of stop motion trailer. So if you haven't seen the trailer, go and watch the trailer, because it's well worth watching.
It's the Wallace and Gromit of video game trailers.
Yes, it is the Wallace and Gromit of video game trailers, and they go to the moon and they have cheese and crackers.
That sounds charming. I'll have to check this one out. I think you can still get a free copy on Twitch Prime, or maybe that's
for Piku Niku.
I think so, yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize they were giving away.
Yeah, that seemed weird because it's like still fairly new, right? Like,
it came out this week.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, I saw it and I picked it up straight away. I was like, this looks like a kind of game I like. It's very story centric, told through kind of gameplay, and it's really funny. The characters are great, and each character, even though it's quite limited in animation, has like a very unique style and gets across like their expressions and stuff in a unique way. So I'd be interested to see what both of you think of it if you do pick it up.
Piku Niku's also got two player, hasn't it? But it's not two-player co-op main story.
It does, yeah. So you play as a character called Piku, and you can play with two players, and the second player plays as the character called Niku, which is like an orange version of the same character that you are. I haven't played it, but I think you're right. I don't think it is the main story that you go through. I don't know how that main story could work if it was two-player, because it is very single-player centric, that you are this beast that's awoken from the cave and you are the main antagonist and hero.
Yeah, I remember, because when they did their press release for it and we put the article up about it on Lootbox, one of the things I saw in there was like, oh, it's two-player, and then it's like levels designed specifically for like co-op. So I'm presuming it's totally different.
Maybe it's like like a Portal 2 situation where there's like, you know, like a one-player story and a two-player story that's like maybe a little less robust narratively. Either way, it sounds really charming.
I'll give the two-player a go, and I'll report back in a future episode and let you guys know. Cool. But Pete, you said last week, like, we didn't really catch it. It wasn't a proper episode last week. It was like a Pixel wasn't here. You didn't want to talk about certain things. You wanted to keep Minute to talk about with Pixel. I'm interested what else you played and over the last week, and what you played on your trip while you were away.
I don't care. I want to talk about Minute. Okay. tell me what you thought about Minute.
All right, yeah, let's start there. So Minute, we talked a little bit about it last week because Max had also played it, but I liked Minute a lot. I think it's a really charming game. I don't know that I'd give it a top 10 of last year.
Okay, I don't care what you have to say now. Next topic.
All right. So that's our dynamic now, Pixel? All right. Okay, I see how it is.
Now he's going to sell you more chocolate, so it's fine. All right.
No, but overall, I really did like the game quite a bit. I think that it is really unique and super charming, and I think its initial pitch was enough to draw me in. But seeing how well they developed that so that it wasn't just like the same kinds of things happening again and again, you know, because I feel like a lot of games that have a novel hook like that, they like lean into it and it's just the same thing until it gets boring. And I feel like Minute never got boring, you know?
Did you go talk to the old man like in your first couple of runs?
Yep. Yeah. And like, it was funny because as soon, like I got there at, I had like probably 10 seconds left on the clock, you know? And I just wanted to see, oh, maybe he'll give me an item or something. And I was like, this is the guy. This is the guy Pixel told me about who's just intentionally wasting my time.
So good.
Yeah, the game has a really good sense of humor. And like, it was a really enjoyable experience. Like, my one criticism of it is that I just really felt like the ending was a little anticlimactic. And I wanted a little bit more, you know, like even the fact that like, and that's kind of a spoiler. I'm gonna avoid that statement. We can talk off mic about it. Right. But
not while
I think,
I'm here, because I probably will end up playing this game at some point.
Yes, yeah, so I don't want to spoil it for you. It's definitely a game that I believe that, like, if you're an indie fan and if you like sort of top down, you know, Zelda games like Pixel does, like, it must play. You know, an absolute must play. So I liked it. Okay, Pixel, relax.
That's good. That's good.
I probably liked it about as much as you liked Undertale, so we're even.
That's a fair statement, though.
But in terms of other stuff, I think I covered a lot of the stuff I played on my trip because a lot of my time ended up going to reading Jason Schreier's book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, which we discussed last week. But this week, I promised you guys last week that I was going to dive into that game, Awake My Love, which is the text-based game about the Syrian refugees. And I think I'm probably about halfway through it right now. From what I've read, the game's about 2 hours. I played it for an hour the other night before Kingdom Hearts 3 came out. And I really like it. It is, if you're somebody who doesn't like gameplay light games, then you're not going to enjoy it. The only mechanic is choosing text. Like, that's
it's like a visual novel style thing, right?
Yeah, but like even less so.
Okay. It's literally just reading.
Yeah. like, you know, your traditional visual novel, like, there's still character models and, like, locations and stuff like that. The only art in this game is when you play the husband in the husband-wife duo, and it's only when your wife sends you pictures. I've seen probably three pictures in the whole game, you know, where it was like, oh, like, here's a selfie that she sent you. Like, here's a picture of, like, a city you had been to together that's demolished, and she's upset about that. Like, it's little things like that, so you're getting kind of tiny glimpses into her world, you know, and what she's experiencing. But otherwise, you're just looking at a phone. So, like, if that sounds like that's not going to be appealing to you, then, you know, maybe this isn't, you know, worth your time. But I think for me, as somebody who really likes, you know, kind of choose your own adventure style games, it's really fun because there's been several instances where things have gotten very tense and I felt like the decisions I had to make mattered a lot. And I'm very interested in going back and playing and seeing if it's a game that really has, like, interesting branches or if it is just kind of the illusion of choice, like a Telltale game where it's like, you could pick one or the other, but ultimately the same stuff's going to happen, you know?
That really winds me up when games do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
What do you think this is the kind of game that it works well on Switch? Because it is a mobile game as well. Or should I just pick it up on mobile and play as if it's a text messaging app on my phone?
I don't think it matters. Like, I think if you want to play it on your mobile device, that's totally fine.
But it doesn't, like, harbor the experience. Like,
no, not at all. Because, I mean, like, at the end of the day, all you're doing is scrolling. I'm using the joystick and the A button to scroll and advance, and, like, that's fine. I don't think that the experience would be any lesser for you if you were playing it on mobile, but it certainly works just fine on Nintendo Switch.
Has the story captured you?
I'm definitely interested in it because the writing, I think, does a pretty good job of having subtlety to it. And not always. There are times where, like, I feel like some of the exchanges between the characters, like, don't necessarily, like, they don't feel authentic to me in the way that, like, I talk to my partners, right? But, like, everybody's different. But there are lots of moments where it feels like they really get it right, you know, of, like, you know, where your character is. Like, I had an instance where I disagreed with what the wife character wanted to do. I was like, that seems dangerous. You know, like, I don't feel like she, like, there's, like, a plan in place. And she's like, well, it's not working. I think I should go do this. And, like, you get into an argument with her, you know? And it's like, to me, it seemed anyway that what I was saying and how I was saying it was impacting the conversation, you know? So, like, when it is, like, a life or death situation and it's like, oh, like, there's gunshots at the border. I don't think I should go there. It feels like the stakes are very real. And it feels like if I make a mistake or if I say the wrong thing that I could, like, easily end up putting, you know, this person in a situation where she dies. And that, to me, has been really compelling. You know, it's allowed me to get emotionally invested in moments where I'm not seeing what's happening. I'm just looking at a phone, you know? Like, just for example, without spoiling anything, there was a scene where, you know, she's on a bus and people start shooting at the bus, you know? And then, like, she stops texting you for, like, a few minutes and you're just like, oh my god, what's happening, you know? And, like, I remember having that sense of, like, that panic of just like, oh my, like, what is gonna be the next thing, like, and knowing that no matter what happens, ultimately I can't do anything, you know? I can talk, I can try to advise her, but, like, I have no control over the action of the game. And, like, I think that's a really interesting thing because video games are all about agency and all about making you feel like a god for the most part, you know? Even the most innocuous game is all about you becoming powerful or how powerful you are, you know, or at least several. So, like, a game where you're just kind of sitting on the sidelines and hoping that this person that you care about doesn't get hurt is a really different experience.
I really hope, you know, like you mentioned that she stops texting you for a few minutes. I know nothing about this game, by the way.
Yeah.
I hope the big twist is that it's actually someone, she does die and someone else picks up her phone.
Someone stole the phone.
That'd be such a good twist for a game like that.
That's exactly what I would expect from someone who said they wanted to play through the genocide ending of Undertale, you monster.
Yeah, it makes me think, though, I'd love a game like this that kind of sent you push notifications throughout the day. Like, it was a real conversation, and she's like, right, I'm going to go get on the bus now. And then she goes away for a while, and then a couple of hours later, she's just like, I've just made it to my place. Now, what should I do? And then you can go back into the game and have kind of a conversation with her, and then it, like, it's like a real-time thing.
Yeah, that'd be a cool idea for a mobile game.
Yeah. There you go.
You could put microtransactions in it, like, oh, you're out of credit now. I need to buy some more.
Yeah, it's like you can strap a rocket to the back of this bus to go quicker. Would you like to spend $5.99?
Do you want to check and see if your virtual wife is dead? Pay us. just buy two love tokens. It's horrible. I'm gonna try and finish it before next week's episode, but like as I mentioned before, Kingdom Hearts 3 came out this week and I've been waiting for that game since 2005, people. That is 14 years, so hey, I'm a little preoccupied.
I feel you. I've been scaring myself shitless with zombies in Resident Evil 2, so I totally get it. And then I'm going to play a really cheery game of Piku Niku to like give me a little bit of respite from it every now and again.
Yeah, that's definitely important.
Trying to balance out your games, are you know, nice, bright, and colorful, mm-hmm. zombies and death.
That's how I feel anytime I watch or play something that's like dark and gritty. Like I watched like The Punisher season 2 last week and was just like, this is hyper violent. I need to go play some Stardew Valley. Like, I need something with no blood.
Did you ever watch the TV show Pushing Daisies?
I watched a little bit of the first season when it was new.
They only did one season, I think. No, they did two. Yeah, and then it got cancelled. But I really liked the fact that it was death and people getting murdered and stuff, but it was in this really bright, colourful, kind of ridiculously over-the-top kind of style. They should do more.
That sounds awesome.
Basically, it was this guy that could bring people back from their dead by touching them. And so he would, like, solve... He was paired up with this private eye and would solve the crimes by waking up the dead people and saying, who murdered you? And then putting them back and then killing them again. And then they would go solve it. But if he woke someone up for more than a minute, it would take someone else's life. It would kill someone else. So he woke up like this woman that he fancied who died and then ended up killing someone else by mistake. Yeah, basically progresses like
Spoilers
that.
Spoilers for Pushing Daisies.
That's like the first 5 seconds. Spoilers for a TV show from 2004.
Saying that, you haven't watched Game of Thrones yet, so, you know.
No, I haven't. I know so much about that game.
That game.
Oh my god, that TV show.
You still can't get it, right?
I know Sean Bean dies. Like, you know, that's like real spoilers.
Does he, though?
Yeah, he dies in everything.
Yeah, it's true.
Is that really a spoiler, though?
Well, when he gets cast in something, you know he's going to die anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. Right, so we actually have some pretty interesting news on the list this week. Starting things off, we got the newest Switch firmware version 7.0 has released, and not a flashy update, but there's some significant stuff that came along with this. Steve, you wrote an article about it for lootpots.com. What do you want to introduce? What was the highlight for you?
The highlight for me was the new Toadette icon. That was about the only thing
I was hoping you might say that.
There was literally the only new things that got added in this update were 6 new Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe icons and some new languages. That was it.
And stability.
You tell me you didn't set your Switch to Taiwanese?
No, I didn't. But I really am grateful for the general system stability improvements that have really enhanced my user experience. Did I cut out?
No, I'm sure that joke was great,
sure,
but it cut out.
Well, you'll hear the joke when you edit. Never mind.
Hold on, wait, everyone be quiet. We'll laugh in 3 seconds. Ready, Pete? 3, 2, 1.
Oh,
there we go, we
one.
Can edit that in, it's fine. Nice joke, Steve, nice joke.
I can only assume this update is setting the ground for something else that's coming. Usually the major releases do have something, like 6.0 came out in September, it added the Nintendo Switch Online stuff and the game sharing and the ability for NES game emulation and things like that. I wonder if 7.0 kind of adds in the SNES emulation that's been rumored, or if there's going to be something else. What do you guys think?
I really hope they finally got around to adding themes into the Switch. Because, you know, I'm sure they must have made quite a bit of money from the 3DS selling themes on the eShop, surely. And that's money that they've just not even tried to get this time around. And I think, like, most users want at least some kind of theme on their Switch, even if it's, like, a minimalist one.
Absolutely.
Just something other than black or white.
Even just, like, an icon swap of the bottom icons and the ability to change the background color, something would be nice.
Like, nice Pikmin background.
Bit busy for me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I feel like that's one of the things I'm constantly waiting for an update about, because like the menu is there. It's been there since the beginning. Like, I remember the first day that I explored my Switch, I was like, oh, cool. Like, they're going to probably release some like 3DS style themes one of these days. I'm sure that'll be around in the next couple months. Nope. It's like, yeah. Netflix. It's one of those things where I'm just like, how did you not launch with this? And how do we still not have it almost 2 years into this life cycle? You know?
There's so many things with the Switch, though. Like, if you take the 3DS for comparison, you could make the icons smaller so you could see more icons on the screen at once. That'd be a great feature. Folders. I'd love to have folders so I can put my games in categories.
I'd love the option to have the all software screen as the main screen. So rather than a horizontal kind of scrolling left and right, I can see everything in a grid and I can just pick and choose what I want without having to scroll all the way to the end and then scroll some more to find the game I want. Or even a search functionality.
I would also love the ability to like pin icons, you know, so that like it's not just, oh, here are the most recent things you've played. Because like, you know, like and it's a minor inconvenience, you know, at worst. But I had that happen to me a little bit ago where like I went to go play Smash for the first time in like, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a month on my Switch. And it was like, oh, I had played a bunch of indie games, so it got pushed off the main screen. And it's like, oh, you know, I obviously always want Smash on the main screen, you know, so it would be nice to be like you guys are saying, just have the ability to have a little bit more control over what my home screen looks like, whether that's, you know, a theme or pinning things or adjusting icons or any of that stuff. Like, those are all quality of life switches that I would, that is not a pun that I intended. Those are all quality of life updates that I would certainly appreciate.
Going back to like the all software thing, and you mentioned like being able to search for games within the menu, I'd love for there to be just a filter as well. That's like, these are games you've downloaded.
Yeah.
These are games you've archived, and these are games that you need to put the cart into play. Mm-hmm. Because the only way you can find out if it's a downloaded one or a cart one, if you've forgotten, is to hover over it and look for the little car icon, which is useless because you've already had to scroll through and find it to find out. And if you haven't got the car with you, then hey-ho, you're screwed.
Just like having a button where I could like sort things, you know, like, oh, like if there was just a little drop down, like sort by kind of thing, like that would be so helpful.
Yeah, even like as we're getting more and more apps, like you've got YouTube on there and things like that. If Netflix ever does come, I think you'll want the ability to kind of keep those separate from your games. A lot of people
Inky
want
Pen.
That. Inky Pen. When you're coming on and talking 15 minutes about your comics, then you're gonna need to keep that pin there, so you've always got the icon that you can talk about.
The icon to remind you not to talk about comics for 15 minutes.
You know?
Pete, this is your brown, all right? Okay? You have to just live with it.
I know.
I've got to live with everything being brown.
Is that a condition?
You might want to go to a doctor. All right, so Switch firmware 7.0 available now. Go download it.
Yeah. And it's already been hacked already, so, you know, that was worth doing.
God bless hackers. So, moving right along, we got the possible box art and release date for Assassin's Creed Collection on Switch. Pixel Party wrote this one up, and we've got an image that looks pretty legitimate.
Yeah, I'd say it's legit. I haven't seen that artwork anywhere else.
Yeah, and it looks too good to be fake. And not to say that people don't put out some good fakes, but a lot of times the way to catch a fake is because, like what you said, you've seen the art somewhere before. Mm-hmm. So like, this would be a really good piece of fan art with really good lighting, you know, for this mock-up. So it definitely seems legitimate. On the actual box, which you can check out, we've linked to down below to the Loot Pots article that we did on the subject. It's called the Liberation Collection, and it's got the characters. I don't remember their names because it's been quite some time since I played Assassin's Creed.
I know it's Ezio. I don't remember her name, though.
It's actually not Ezio. Is it the guy? No, it's the main guy from Assassin's Creed 3. Uh-huh. If you look at the art, he's holding a tomahawk. And it's the half Native American guy from Assassin's Creed 3. And then you can also tell if you look at the image that's like the background image that's both on the box and the background art that it's plastered over. There's the original American flag in the background.
Oh, yeah. His name's Desmond, by the way.
No. Desmond's the... No, that's the guy what? In real life.
Oh, I really have no idea.
You're over two, Steve.
It says it follows Desmond's half-English, half-Mohawk ancestor. Oh,
right.
Connor.
Connor, there you go. That's his name. And then the other character on the box is, I forget her name as well, but she was the main character from the PlayStation, I want to say Vita?
It is. I have this game on the Vita. It's really good.
Yeah, and that's Liberation is the name of the game, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was the first female assassin.
The only other time you've been able to play a female assassin apart from the latest one.
The last two.
You couldn't play it in Origins. It was just Odyssey.
Sorry, not Origins. The one before Origins, you could also be a woman. It was the one in England. There was like a set of twins that you played as.
Okay.
I'm not trying to like, well, actually you.
No. Yeah, please
I would just,
do.
I'd rather me correct you than you get dragged on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it also came to PS3 and Xbox 360, I think.
Yeah, like years later, they did a full HD port of it.
So presumably we'd be getting that version rather than like a upscaled version of the Vita.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Interestingly enough, they're supposedly remasters of these games. And they're also coming to PlayStation and Xbox as well.
Yeah, I think I read that it's like a part of the season pass for the Assassin's Creed Odyssey. You get Assassin's
it's
Creed
included,
3.
Yeah, it's included in that, but they're also getting retail releases separately by the looks of it. Nothing official yet, but that's what it's looking like at the moment.
See, I have that season pass, but I will probably end up buying it for the Switch anyway.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they hold up against each other, because I don't think we've had an Assassin's Creed game on Switch apart from that streaming version in Japan, have we?
No, there definitely hasn't been one. The last one, I think, was Assassin's Creed 3 on the Wii U.
I think, did we get Black Flag on the Wii U as well?
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe we did.
I don't know that we did, actually.
I'm definitely not researching this right now. Hold on.
I really like the piratey stuff.
Yeah, me too. Black Flag was a phenomenal game.
Yeah, it did come to the Wii U.
Yeah, weird.
Wow, okay.
So that was the last one that was on a Nintendo console, right?
Yeah, it must have been, because the games following Black Flag didn't come to last-gen consoles, and the Wii U was definitely, you know, when it came to releases, it was more comparable with the PS3 and Xbox 360 than, you know, current-gen stuff.
With that in mind, it's really surprising that they chose the Liberation game and Assassin's Creed 3 instead of Black Flag, which they could have ported from the Wii U version.
Well, I can see that if it's coming to PS4 and Xbox, that you're going to do a retail release for those games, you might as well kind of just do the Switch one while you're at it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I still think it's... because I remember when this rumor first dropped, there was a lot of people thinking it was going to be the Ezio collection, and I feel like...
Yeah, I think we discussed it on this show that we thought it was going to be the Ezio collection, because it was like, well, what other collection could it be?
Right, and I'd be way more interested in that than this, because Assassin's Creed 3 was not very good.
Is Liberation any good? I never played that.
It was okay, but it was a portable. It felt like it wasn't open world. It was like it felt a lot more linear, that you go from this mission to this mission to this mission, because it was on a handheld console of that era.
Okay.
So Assassin's Creed 3 is really the kind of selling point for this one. If you like that game and you like the open world Assassin's Creed,
you,
I guess.
And you
maybe.
Didn't play it on Wii U?
Yeah, it's probably one to pick up.
So yeah, apparently that's out on February the 15th was the date the retailer put up. Whether that's right or not, we don't know. But if it is, we'll see it. And if
yeah, that's so
yeah,
close.
We'll see it in the next week, really.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Unless they're going to just like phantom drop it. But even so, they can't do that if there's a physical release. So I don't know. It's weird.
We'll see.
I doubt it's February 15th. That seems a little crazy to me. But
seems too soon.
Yeah. Maybe that's like when we'll get the announcement.
Yeah. Tell you what, I'll just check Twitter to make sure there hasn't been a direct announced while we're recording. No, we're good.
All right, good. So keep your eyes peeled for this one if you're an Assassin's Creed fan. Up next, we've got Songbird Symphony, which is a rhythm-based platformer coming to Switch this July. This game looks adorable.
Looks so good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So cute.
The art is so, so, so pretty. I think my favorite thing about it was, in typical Pixels Twitter fashion, you tweeted out a GIF from it, and the first comment I saw was someone like, is this Gen 8? And I'm like, in what universe do these look like Pokemon?
No, to be fair, two characters in that little GIF I posted are Pokemon.
Wait, who?
What? Watch the GIF
one
again.
One looks like right. Squirtle, right? No, Bulbasaur.
Squirtle.
I'm
and
looking.
Magikarp.
Yeah.
They've made like parody versions of them for the game.
Oh, wait, hold on. This is not the. All right, hold on. I gotta pull this up.
But yeah, I really like the look of this game, and like anything musically rhythmy based that has a story like Wonder Song, I'm gonna be all over.
Yeah, it does look really, really good. It's a puzzle platformer that's beat based, basically. It's a rhythmic puzzle platformer.
Oh, okay. No, I just found it. I see it. Yeah, I mean, that one guy definitely looks like Magikarp. But even the Squirtle, like, he's green and stuff.
That's why I thought it was Bulbasaur.
It's just
green.
A turtle.
To be fair, it's one of those games where if I'd just seen a screenshot of it, I probably wouldn't have been that interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you watch the trailer and you see everything animated to the beat of that section of the game, I know they use one song over the trailer, but the fact that they've ingrained that into everything, like all the, I think the example's like a flower that you open up that pushes you up into the air to get to the next platform. You have to interact with that on the beat for it to work. So there's loads of little intricate details into it.
The boss battles look really interesting too.
Yeah, they're like mini games. It does have mini games in it, but the boss battles also look like mini games in like a sense where it's like you're pressing buttons in time to something that's overlaid on the screen rather than you actually fighting the boss.
This game interests me more than the one we spoke about last week, which was announced at the, I think it was announced at the Indie Highlights. It was kind of like that metal rhythm game, which was, it looked like it was just kind of a standard rhythm game where something happened above it. This seems like there's a lot more involved. You're pushing things around, you're solving puzzles, you're actually doing things rather than it just being kind of a shooter.
Yeah, and I think it's like particularly attractive looking to me because like, I like rhythm games fine, but I'm definitely more of a platforming fan. So like giving me that little extra incentive, you know, like that's kind of what pushes it over the edge for me, is that it feels like a unique platformer and a unique rhythm game.
It was when I saw a little bird's head bobbing up and down to the beat. I was like, yep, sold.
Yeah.
That's all I need. That'll do it.
If only it had been a horse. So then next up, we got Piranha Plant joining the Smash Bros. Roster in the 2.0 update. So I like how in the doc we wrote PSA, like, don't forget to redeem it by, like, the 31st. I'm like,
from yesterday before Piranha Plant even made it, Pete. But, you know, someone couldn't record yesterday.
I was going to say, I was like, oh, shit, I hope that they hear this quick enough for that PSA to be relevant.
Can you imagine listening going, what?
Yeah.
I didn't get to it.
You're going to sleep on the 31st and it just ticks over to February 1st and you're like, no!
And your battery just flashes until your switch fades.
I think the funny thing is that if you don't, like, if you haven't redeemed him, like, you can pay for it, but it's like at a later date. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you did miss it, not only did you like, or miss getting it for free, it's like throwing salt in the wound of now you have to pay for it and you have to wait.
Can you buy it individually, or is it just like, is it a bonus when you buy all the other ones?
They haven't said. They've just said it will be available as paid DLC.
I bet it's a bonus if you buy the other paid DLC.
I'd imagine it's part of the season pass, because I don't think they're going to want to just buy this pack.
Well, because if they make it totally separate away from the DLC as a separate purchase, then they're going to have the situation where people are playing maps and the character selection things don't quite match up. So I don't know if that's something they'll do or not.
It's definitely like uncharted territory for them right now. It's going to be interesting to see what the move on that is. But I don't care because I bought the game digitally, so I don't even have to do anything.
I mean, it's not exactly difficult. You press the plus button and click redeem coins, and that's literally it. That's all you have to do, and then they'll send you a code in your email.
It's just funny because every time I saw the PSA, like, I would like have this like gut moment of like panic. I'm like, oh my god, did I do that? I'm like, I have it digitally. Relax. It's been done. There's nothing you have to do.
Yeah, it is like that sigh of relief when I turned the game on. It was like, Piranha Plant joins the battle, and I was like, yes, I finally got him. I don't have to worry about anything. Now
I haven't redeemed it yet. I'm living on the edge. I'm going to wait until the last 2 minutes and then slowly press the button.
You're a wild man.
Now I just need my Piranha Plant amiibo.
Oh, did you pre-order it?
Yeah.
Yep.
I missed out on the pre-orders. It was up on the UK Nintendo store, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I have no idea when it's coming, but yeah, I've pre-ordered it.
Yeah, I pre-ordered it, like, every one of the next wave ones because, like, I missed out on whoever they already put out. I think it was, like, Wolf and maybe one other one where I was like, oh, cool, like, I'll get that when I can. And I'm like, oh, no, cool, this is, like, Gen 1 amiibos again where, like, they're gone in 5 seconds. Like, crap.
The 2.0 update also added a few other things. The main biggest one is now that you can play the Spirit Board with up to 4 players. So previously it was only single player. You can now take other people into the battle with you, which was kind of the other big feature.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, the only caveat is if any one of the people in the battle gets KO'd, the thing is over. It's like it's not like a additional kind of lives for you. It is if
I like
anyone
that.
Dies, they're gone.
That's so brutal. Like if you play with a friend and they're not quite mm-hmm. good enough, you're just gonna be like, get out, I don't wanna play with you anymore, leave.
And some spirits that were originally exclusives to Pokemon Let's Go or Super Mario Party owners, like Partner Pikachu, Partner Eevee, Dice Block, River Survival, and Golden Dash Mushroom are all going to be available in the shop. So you'll be able to buy those if you don't have those games.
It's pretty good. It kind of ruins the exclusivity thing, though.
It does, yeah. But I'm probably going to get Partner Eevee because I like Eevee. And I got Pokemon Pikachu, so.
So, Pixel, have you tried him yet?
No, to be fair, I haven't touched Smash Bros. In weeks. Absolute weeks.
I'm in the
I've
same
been
boat.
All these indie games.
Like, I love Smash. I don't love playing Smash by myself. I've never been that kind of person. Like, excluding, like, the challenge mode in Melee, which I feel like they've never really quite gotten right again. That's really the only, like, incentive I've ever felt to play those games by myself. Like, once I unlocked all the characters, I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna play with my friends now. I picked up Smash this past weekend for the first time been quite some time. But yeah, so I'm really excited to jump into getting to play Piranha Plant. I have no idea what he's gonna play like.
He's really cool.
In the same way that I like went into Smash with like, I want to become an Isabel main, I want to become a Piranha Plant main. So yeah. Even if I'm not good with him, like, I think I'm gonna practice. Because
I can see that he will be fairly easy to pick up. He feels a little bit like Kirby in that sense.
Okay.
He's got this really cool kind of flying thing. If you press special and up, then his like leaves go around like a helicopter, and he like you can move him around the screen.
Oh, right. Yeah, I do
and like
remember that.
Go into people. If you press just special when you're standing still, he shoots like a spiky ball over people. He's got like breath, like poison breath that he kind of shoots out and can attack people with. So he's quite a versatile character. I do miss my ground pound from Kirby, though.
Yeah, I really like characters with, like, strong down aerials.
Mm-hmm.
Though, just real quick, and then we can move on. When you were saying the thing about the poison breath, and you were, like, trying to gather your thoughts, I really thought you were going to say he has poison breath that he, you know, breathes. I was so disappointed when you found what you were trying to say.
I'll say breathe now, and then you can just edit it in.
All right, so moving along to out this week, we've got a decent amount of games coming to the Switch from January 31st to February 1st, several of which we talked about on last week's show. Speaking of which, first up, we've got Downwell, which we talked about at length on last week's show. And is a platformer that I think is fantastic. So if you trust my opinions on platformers, which you should, Downwell, very worth your time and incredibly affordable at only
yeah.
$3.
Yeah, I think we all made the consensus last week that for £2.69, it was worth gambling Pete's opinion on.
Yeah, I'm just saying the last platformer that I pushed this hard on this show was Celeste. So. Give it a shot.
That was a real curveball Celeste game of the year contender. Yeah, Pete, real unique opinion there.
Just saying, I've been standing for that game since pre-release, so don't even.
I think Downwell is one of those games that's compatible with that. Is it
flip grip?
Switch,
yeah.
Switch grip?
Is it called the flip grip? Yeah, yeah, it is. When we had Max on the show last week, he actually is an owner of the flip. Grip, like, yeah, flip grip. And he was really excited to have like a full proper platformer to play on it. So I'm really interested to hear what he has to say about it. Because the game was originally on mobile, so it definitely benefits from that dimension, you know?
Well, yeah, looking at it and the trailer for the game, Nintendo's trailer, you can tell that the screen just needs to be flipped, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I know it works just fine. In that dimension, like, I originally played the game on PlayStation Vita, and this is a bigger screen than that, so it'll be fine. But I really do highly recommend this one. I don't sleep on it, because, again, it's so affordable. Like, even if you play it and it's not for you, like, you lost $3, so it's a cup of coffee.
It's not so much the monetary value, it's the time value. I'm, like, I'm time poor when it comes to the game time I have to play games at the moment. I've got Pico Nico, I'm playing Resident Evil, I've got Assassin's Creed I'm halfway through. I've played about 2 hours, I reckon, of Red Dead Redemption. I've played hardly any of that game. There's just so many things to play.
Yeah, don't you remember when there used to be, like, a lull? Remember when there was that quiet period of the year for, like, 6 months where you're like, I'm going to play all the games that I missed from last year and some of these nice indie titles. And now you're just like, oh, the hottest time of the year is the fall and the winter. And then immediately it just starts all over again. It's like you have like a 2 or 3 week like time to catch your breath, and it's like, all right, it's the end of January, Resident Evil, Kingdom Hearts, next month we got like 6 games coming out. It's like, oh my god, slow down.
I think the main issue is, and it's not an issue, it's something that's great, but
it's a great problem to have.
Nowadays indie games are getting like such high quality, and they're really contending with AAA games in terms of enjoyment, graphics, everything really. So now, whereas before indie games were kind of the underdog, now there's indie games that, you know, I would pick over some AAA games. And because of that, the lulls don't really happen anymore. It's like, oh, this game I've been waiting for, like Mario's out. Oh, and then there's this indie game that I've been waiting 6 months for too.
Well, and then like, how often does it happen where there's an indie game that you've never heard of and you weren't hyped up for, and then all of a sudden it's a moment, you know, and everyone's playing this thing and you're like, well, crap, I gotta check this out. You know, because I think aside from just like quality, because I feel like indie games have been upped, like the best indie games have been up to par with AAA games for quite some time. But I feel like we, like, to your point, Pixel, we've hit a point in these last couple of years where like they're not just competing with them in a quality level. They're competing with them on like a mindshare level, you know, like the fact that like a game like Celeste was put up for Game of the Year up against freaking God of War and Red Dead Redemption and these games that had hundreds of people working on them for like 6 years is insane. And it's like, if you really want to play all of the best games, the most talked about games of the year, like, it's a never-ending gauntlet.
It's so true. To be fair, the term indie's becoming a bit redundant now because... Yeah. Sure, it means an independent studio, but that's not what people actually think when they hear the word indie. They think 2D platformer, or, you know, smaller game, cheaper game, but it's just not the case anymore. They're just exactly the same.
I've had an idea for a video for a long time that I wanted to make about how, like, the evolution of the term indie when it comes to games is exactly like it was for, like, music. what is that distinction worth if the game makes millions of dollars? You know, like... Cool, like Stardew Valley was made by one guy. That guy's a millionaire now because it's sold like, like literally, I think in Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, it's like a few months after the game came out, he had like $15 million in the bank or something like that. It's like, okay, well, that's like a pretty big game.
I love that he still drove his car with one door that wouldn't open there at that point.
The moral of the story here is if you find the time, play Downwell. It's really good, and it's not a game that I think requires a huge investment of time. It's a game that's easy to play, like jump in and out, play for a little bit, you know, so.
Is that another Devolver game?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, Devolver Digital are publishing it. I did not know that they published. Man, Devolver is such a good publisher.
Shout out
to Devolver, guys.
Okay, yeah, they're good. They're good, right, aren't they, Pixel? We'll leave it at that.
Reply to my goddamn emails.
I was like, what did they do? Like...
No, so I've been emailing their PR guy for like on and off. I've sent them about 3 emails over the last 6 months. I've never had a reply,
it's
ever.
Like, please pay attention to us, Devolver Digital.
But they put out some great titles. Pico Nico is a Devolver game as well. And
there you go.
Hotline Miami as well. I hope Hotline Miami still comes to Switch.
And yeah, you're right. Yeah, Minute. That was another game I didn't know was published by Devolver Digital until I booted it up. It happens to me so frequently where I'm like, oh, I want to play this indie game. It's like, oh, Devolver? Hell yeah, man. Like, you guys are just killing it. Please pay attention to us. We would really love to continue to cover your games. So speaking of a company that does pay attention to us, Super Rare Games has a physical version of Knights of Pen and Paper, which is available now. It was available for pre-order. It seems as though pre-orders have closed, but it's going to be out this Thursday, January 31st as well. So if you want to, if you're a physical person, here's your opportunity.
I'm a physical person. I think most people are physical people.
I'm not. I downloaded my consciousness into the internet years ago.
What's your name, Neo? Oh, is it comes? It comes as a double pack. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's two games, and rather than cramming them both onto one cart, you get two separate sealed games within like a overall container box.
Oh, that's cool.
That's nice.
I figured it was like a collection, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do that thing where one game's on a cart, the other's a download code.
I hate that. I hate that so much.
I mean, it really wouldn't work for like a physical printer, though. Like, but this is the whole appeal of buying a game from someone like Super Rare Games, is you get it on the cartridge forever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know much about these games, to be honest. I think they're like little RPG games. Have either of you played them?
No. I hadn't heard about them until I saw them on the dock. So I went and checked them out. Like, they look pretty cool. All right, hot takes, boys. Next up, we've got Dragon Marked for Death.
Yeah, it's like a 2D pixel RPG side-scroller where four people can play together. Max seemed really excited about it on Twitter, so I added it to the doc.
I like the art.
Sorry, I'm having trouble understanding right now. Please try a little later.
Go away, Alexa.
What happened?
We don't understand.
I'm really confused. I didn't address her at all.
You know, I was watching a YouTube video yesterday about a car, and like the engine went, and then she thought I'd said something. She was like, sorry, I don't know that one. And it was literally the engine, or she managed to interpret Alexa from it.
Alexa just wants to be on the podcast. That's all it is.
Let's all say Alexa even more, because then everyone's echoes is going to go off when they're listening to this.
Sorry. I'm having trouble understanding.
She's having trouble understanding me, guys. I was going to ask what she thought about Dragon Marked for Death, but I don't know. I don't know.
That's a good point. If we all go, hey, Google, Alexa, everyone listens to the podcast now, things will be going off. It'd be great.
Yeah. Okay, Google, subscribe to the podcast.
Okay,
oh God,
Google.
My phone turned on!
Jesus.
Oh my God. I'm getting attacked by machines, you guys. We're going to move on. So next up, we've got another game called Airheart: Tales of Broken Wings, which is described as a diesel punk airplane action game, which sounds dope.
Yeah, this one looked really interesting to me when I added it to the doc. So it seemed it's got this really weird thing that says that every level is built on top of the previous one. If you click through to look at the pictures, it's kind of like each level seems to be like a floating island, and you're flying this plane and going from one level to the next level to the next level. It looks really, really beautiful in my opinion.
It's like Gone Home, but going down instead of up. You ever play that game? I think it's an Ubisoft one.
Gone Home.
Gone Home?
I think Gone Home.
Gone Home's the one where you walk around the house and all your family's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that one then.
That's not.
Going Home? Something Home.
That's not an Ubisoft game.
you play as a little robot thing. What's that called?
Oh my God. I can see it. It's the little, he's blue, right? Shoot, what is it?
Rayman Raven Rabbids.
No, he was orange, not blue. Grow Home. There we
grow
go.
Grow Home. And then there's Grow Up, I think.
Grow Home.
Oh, is there a sequel?
There's two of them, yeah.
Plays Bud the robot.
Maybe they introduced the blue robot in the second one.
Hey, the art style is quite similar too, apart from they've put borders.
Oh, yeah.
Black outlines along it.
Yeah. This is really interesting, though. I like the look of this quite a bit, and the combat looks very unique. So, yeah. I like a good like aerial dogfighting game. So, I might check this out.
I always like the concept of them, but whenever there's a moment in a game that's like an aerial dogfighting scenario, I'm terrible at it. As soon as the sticks switch and they like turn inverted and I'm now pulling down to go up, and like my brain just cannot figure it out. And I'm not an inverted y-axis kind of guy.
It's funny because that happens to me too, and like in Kingdom Hearts 3 there's like this the gummy ship segments where you're like in a spaceship, and in Kingdom Hearts 2 the first time they spit me out and the controls weren't inverted, and I was like, I can't do this. And I never play inverted controls, but when I'm in a plane they need to be inverted.
I'm the same.
That's how a plane works.
My brain goes like, if you're moving a camp like first person view or you know third person view, moving the camera angle around, it has to be the correct way. Up is up, down is down.
Yes.
Aeroplanes, any vehicle. If it's inverted, my brain just goes, yep, that's fine. That works. That makes sense.
Yeah, my boyfriend always plays inverted, and if we ever switch, like in the middle of a game, it drives me bananas. And he describes it as, imagine someone pulling the back of your head.
Yeah, that's what every inverted person says.
They pull it down and it goes up. But I'm just like, yeah, but no one's pulling the back of my head. I'm literally just moving a stick.
Like, it's only like 10% of gamers or something that play with inverted controls. It's a weird minority. It's like left. It's like having a left hand. And every one of them I have heard describe it, that's the rationale. It's like you think about the joystick as it's the back of someone's head. And it's
pulled, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to stop. You said it's like having a left hand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think most people have a left hand.
I'm sorry. See, you know, it's been so long since I put my brain in the internet, I forget what it's like to have a physical form. It's like being left-handed.
There we go.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, so I'm interested in this one. I don't know if I'll pick it up, but I'm definitely going to keep an eye on it and see what the reviews look like on this gal. All right, so next up we've got Gabuchi, which is an adorable name.
Looks like an adorable game.
Yeah, I mean, it looks just like a cute little, like...
Looks like Box Boy, kind of, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's just got, like, a very, like, lo-fi, like, early PC or, like, Game Boy, like, puzzle game look to it, you know? Mm-hmm. Some cute little boxes with cute little faces, and you gotta eat boxes that are... Or blocks, they're called. And it's like, your character can eat blocks that are the same color as himself, and then you can change his color so you can eat different blocks, and... You know, if you like arcadey puzzle games, might be one to check out.
Oh, wow. It's actually got a level editor with it as well, so you can make your own. That's quite cool.
That's really cool, yeah. Yeah, this is appealing.
You know what? It's on offer for today only, so I'm signing in and buying it.
And if you listen to the podcast, you've missed out because we record this a day in advance. Sorry.
All right, so next up we got Bombfest, which is explosive fun, allegedly.
So what happens after I have a curry?
Oh, Jesus.
That might be the most vulgar joke that we've ever made.
Yeah, we'll probably cut that one.
Oh, no, I'm leaving that one in. It's time for you to get dragged. So yeah, it's apparently an award-winning party game, which you can play with up to 3 friends. It kind of reminds me of like Bomberman.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, it's last man standing kind of thing. Like, it doesn't look like Bomberman in terms of, like, the way that the levels are laid out, but it's very much like everybody has bombs and you're trying to blow each other up and, you know, last person on the stage takes the round.
It's Bomberman. It's take away the grid and it's Bomberman.
Yeah, it's like a 3D, like, open map Bomberman, kind of. And it looks really fun. This definitely looks like a great party game.
You can play in a kitchen sink.
It's got everything and the kitchen sink.
Oh, see, whenever I see, like, you're a little person in a big world, like, you're playing in a kitchen sink, it just reminds me of Micro Machines V3 from back in the day. And I really want them to remake that exact game. Like, where you go across the table and then you're outside on the water with your little Micro Machines car. I love that game.
Didn't they remake Micro Machines recently?
They've made Micro Machines into a free-to-play piece of shit on mobile. And you have to buy coins and do all sorts of stuff, and it's dreadful.
Don't you love when they do that to a game that you're like, man, this has been gone for so long. I'd love for them to make something else in this franchise, and then it comes back as a bad mobile game.
Oh, what did they do that with? EA did that
With Command & Conquer.
Yeah, Command & Conquer mobile game, yeah.
And then Blizzard did the same thing with Diablo. It's not out yet, so jury's out if Diablo Immortal will be bad, but people were not happy. So, all right, the last game on this list, we've got February 1st. Guys, it's finally here, Wargroove.
You guys are really hyped about Wargroove, aren't you?
Dude, I love Advance Wars. Yeah, I can't wait for this.
I'm more hyped about the level editor than everything else because I've watched them Twitch stream that level editor so many times and it looks incredible.
So, Steve, here's my hope. Since you're so into the level editor, I want you to make a Loot Pots campaign where all the main characters are just us.
Yeah.
Just the 3 of us.
Can you make your own characters in it?
Dialogue and everything.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's got like it's the cutscene editor. So you bring the character in and it comes in. I don't know if you can design the characters, but you can definitely either use the sprites that are in the game and create dialogue, give the characters names and create a whole campaign that is, you know, you go from this area to this area. When you go into this area, trigger this cutscene. It's really in depth of what you can do.
Okay, I might have to get the game just to do that. That sounds really fun.
You can share those campaigns online or with friends.
Yeah, we're going to have to do some loot. Pots campaign.
We have to make an official Loot Pots campaign and release it on the website. We have to do it. It'll just be like like Steve can be the bad guy and he's like, Ocarina of Time is brown, and then like Pixelpar and I like are like, alright, we gotta unite our two armies and take this monster out, and then Steve kills us both and evil prevails.
Okay. Why am I the evil one?
I don't know. Why are you the evil
one? Oh.
That's what we'll have to find out. That's the backstory.
For people that don't actually know what Wargreave is, we should probably tell them.
We spoke about it in depth on the last episode, but yeah, it's because it was announced in the indie highlights, but it is
It's an Advance Wars spiritual successor.
Yeah. Spiritual successor to Advance Wars, like you said.
Only with a lot more content. And there is crossplay day one, which is really cool, and online multiplayer and all that stuff. So if you are a fan of Advance Wars, or even if you like tactical, you know, like RPG, RPGs, definitely seems like a game worth playing. All right, so if you want to let us know what games you're excited about coming out this week, or hit us up about any of the stories we discuss on this week's podcast, remember that you can hit us up at potscast@lootpots.com. That's potscast at lootpots.com. Follow at lootpots on Twitter or visit us at lootpots.com. Moving over into our main topic this week, I mean, come on. Biggest Nintendo story that happened. Metroid Prime 4 has been not only delayed, it is being started over from the ground up.
They scrapped it. It's gone.
This was the craziest news to wake up to. I know for you guys it happened in like the middle of the day. Like I woke up to get ready for work and just saw 20 tweet notifications about this. I was just like, oh my God, like this is one of the wildest stories. Like this never happens.
Yeah, so we got it during the day, and imagine seeing a video like, here's a development update regarding Metroid, and you're like, oh, finally, we're going to get some news. We haven't had a Nintendo Direct since November. How exciting. We've been waiting for something. Oh, well, watch the video. Oh, yeah, we're throwing it out and starting again, and you're not going to get it for another 2 years at least, probably. So that was...
probably more like four.
That was a little bit gut-wrenching.
I just want to see what was wrong with it, because they purposely never even stated which studio was working on it before. We all know it was like Bandai Namco, they're like Singapore one I think it was, and their Japanese studio apparently, but Bandai Namco work on like Smash Bros and stuff. What really went wrong with it? How far in the wrong direction did they go, and what did it look like for Nintendo to have to go, sorry, that's not good enough?
And at what stage did they check it and decide this? Like, do you think it was fairly recently?
Well, Retro Studios did another mass hire a while ago, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact date, but I'm guessing it was
fairly recently.
Yeah, that was probably the point where they were like, sorry, you guys are off it now.
So real quick, I have a little bit of context here that I grabbed for us. Imran Khan, who is one of the senior editors over at Game Informer, he had a couple tweets out that seemed to point to what some of the problems were. So I'll just read these tweets and then we can weigh in. Hearing that the big problem with MP4 development was Nintendo's experimental ad hoc development process. It was being made in parts in different countries. Some studios were trucking along saying it was going smoothly, while elsewhere it was on fire. Internal thinking was that it needs to all be done under one roof to right the ship. Interestingly, Retro made the pitch for their involvement and put together a demo that Nintendo liked. And then he also added this, which I thought was interesting. Some clarification. I think Trilogy was just meant to be announced in December, not necessarily at the Game Awards. I haven't heard specifically it was supposed to be there, and I doubt it. So I think it seems as though they were trying like an experimental development process on it that just went belly up.
Yeah, it was a risky move, though, because it sounds like they've had the Metroid Prime trilogy prepped and ready to, you know, Prime fans, no pun intended, for the new release. So they had that ready, and they must have at least had some faith in this new development.
I'm still laughing in the Prime thing.
Oh, God. Oh, no, fuck it. Don't know what I'll say.
To me, they must have seen something in December and gone, what the fuck is this? Essentially.
Yeah.
Like, this ain't Metroid. What are you guys playing at?
Why is there a Yoshi in the middle of the battlefield?
It's like lead character is no longer Samus. We've got someone new.
It's interesting. I think it must have been, because it was announced at E3 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was probably in production for a year at least ahead of that.
Yeah, for them to announce that it was in development means that they had substantial enough gameplay to warrant saying that, yeah, this is working. For then 2 years later to turn around and go, oh yeah, it's not good enough, guys, sorry.
Well, what I think is so interesting about this whole thing is, like, you rarely see this kind of thing happen. You know, it's happened in the past with, like, some notable examples, like Prey 2 was a game that was really far along that got canceled, and then Arcane, like, redid it, you know, it was like, oh, we're rebooting the whole series and we're starting fresh. But, like, for them to have been working on this game with a development partner for, like, 3 years, like, minimum?
Yeah, like, 2.5, 3, I should imagine, yeah.
And that's minimum, right? Like, it's totally plausible that it was closer to 4, mm-hmm. You know, we just haven't heard about it. Like, who mm-hmm. knows, really? And that all that sunken development cost and time, and they're just like, you know what? The right thing to do is to scrap it and start over with somebody entirely different is, like, such a bold move, but God, do I respect the hell out of them for that. And I think a lot of gamers seem to agree with me, which is great, because this is a thing that I was like, oh God, people are gonna be dragging Nintendo over it. And it feels like, at least anecdotally, that people respect the honesty and the dedication to the quality, you know, and that Nintendo wants to get it right.
Need that gold seal.
I think especially for Metroid, it's really important. Because Metroid is a franchise that I think has a ton of potential that's never really been fully realized.
Which is what is so bizarre, in that they did this new development method. They didn't get anyone, presumably, from the original game on board. It wasn't being produced by the same person that produced the first three games. And yet it was still, this is one of our core staples. This is a huge franchise for us. We're reviving Metroid Prime after the trilogy. This is the first one we've done in years. And yet they still decided just to go with a completely different team and no producer from the previous games.
It is a huge gamble. Whenever, you know, E3 announcement as well, such a big gamble for them to then go, you know what, it didn't pay off.
Yeah, I mean, they must have just been confident in it for some reason, right? Like you said, they obviously have a relationship with Bandai Namco now, and maybe there was some, like, financial cuts that were able to be made because of this development process, where they're like, well, we can save all this money, and if it doesn't work out, we'll see where we're at. But if it does, we'll have this great game that we got for, like, half the cost or something like that. Like, there had to be some motivation to give this a try. But it does seem weird to do it with Metroid and Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah. I mean, part of me wonders, was Retro Studios working on something that they thought was so good? And they're a single game studio. We know that from some tweets from a developer that was working on the game that is now presumably cancelled. Was what they were working on so good that they didn't want to take them off it and move it onto Metroid Prime. And so that's why they went to seek another company in Bandai Namco.
I would imagine that has something to do with it as well. You know, like, I'm sure if Retro was available, Nintendo at least talked to them about it. But what I find interesting is, based on Imran's tweets, it seems as though the only reason Retro is the team that is doing it is because they made a pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're like, we want to do Metroid Prime 4. So I wonder if this was maybe like a Sakurai situation. For those who don't know, famously, Sakurai left Nintendo after the development of Super Smash Bros. Brawl. And the only reason he headed up, Melee. The only reason he headed up Brawl was because Iwata announced that it was coming out and was like, hey, I mean, if you want to come back and do it, the spot's open. So, like, I wonder if this was a similar thing where, like, they had Prime in this, like, really, really, like, shaky kind of place. And Retro's just like, all right, we're going to put this project we've been working on for, like, seemingly what, like, it's been like years they've been working on whatever this game is. And they're just like, we're going to put that on the back burner. We got to come and preserve our legacy.
The other option is they finished it. They finished it and were then able to take on Metroid Prime 4.
That's true. They have been working on it for so long. It's funny. A lot of people have been like, I guess this means that game's canceled. I've never heard somebody raise that point. And that's maybe it's just done.
Because they were hiring more people around the time, a couple of months, I think it was, or a month or so, before the announcement they picked up Metroid Prime 4. It's not like the people that were working there have been reassigned. They've hired new people to start working on that as well. unless they need more people on their team to work on that than they actually had, or some people are polishing up the other game for a potential release.
Yeah, that's another really good point, is that like maybe the game is like mostly done, like maybe it's like 90% done, and now they can move over to having a smaller team, like doing like squashing bugs and finalizing things while they ramp up production on Metroid Prime. Because you got to think, right, like in the original video where this announcement was made, they said, like, it's going to be a long time before we can update you on development, and development's going to take a long time. They're probably entering pre-production on this now. Like, it sounds like they're scrapping everything that they had for the original vision of Metroid Prime 4 and Retro, and, you know, the same producer, I forget the gentleman's name right now, are going to just start fresh. Like, if that's what they're doing, that means there's probably an entire... what year of let's figure out art assets, what are the main mechanics going to be like. There's going to be a lot of time before they really need the full power of the studio behind it.
I've got a feeling that they're probably gonna, they said development's starting again, but I've got a feeling they'll reuse the art assets, because they would have been like the concept designs and the assets and the 3D models would have been the first things to be created, and that would have been in the period when Nintendo were happy with these studios.
That's true.
So it's very likely that they could take those models, reuse them, and just redevelop, you know, the way the game works, the levels, yeah, the maps.
Or at least use those things as like a framework, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe they need to make changes based on the mechanics that they develop, but like, you have some, oh cool, we already have a solid 3D model of Samus that we can use, even if it's not the final one.
Plus Retro have all the old Prime models as well that they can use to remake and base, yeah, off those. So I've got a feeling the art and the graphics will be the fastest part of this game in the redevelopment. It will be the whole concept of the game and the way it works, it will be the tricky bit, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But so my question for you guys is, like, you know, removing, not now that we've talked through the context, right, and some of the theories of why this might have happened, how do you feel about this announcement? Are you upset by the fact that Metroid's not coming? Are you happy to see Retro returning to the franchise? What was your, like, initial gut response to this?
I'm not a huge Metroid fan, so I was surprised that Nintendo were being so open about an announcement like this with such a big franchise, but I wasn't that disappointed just because I wasn't emotionally invested in seeing the game as much as other franchises like,
sure,
Zelda or Pikmin or something. If it was one of those titles, I would have been gutted.
Imagine if it was a number 4 for Pikmin that came up instead, and then this video came out this week, and it was, oh sorry,
yeah,
we're canceling Pikmin 4.
Yeah, I can imagine how people
4.
Feel that are fans of Metroid.
I'm the same as you. I'm disappointed that it's another game that we're going to be waiting a long time for, and presumably they don't have anything else to fill that release window that they were aiming for. Hopefully Metroid Prime HD Trilogy is a thing, which it seems like it is, and will be coming to kind of tide fans of Metroid over. But, I mean, it's strange to me that they didn't even get the producer of the Metroid Prime 2 and 3 involved.
It's a weird one. It's a really strange one. It was strange from the beginning. They never announced which studios were working on it, which is a bit strange too. And now all this has happened.
It also is disappointing that it probably means Nintendo are never going to announce a game this far in advance again. They've been burned by it now. And why would you risk it?
I don't know. I don't know that I agree with that though, because like, were they burned by it? Because from my perspective, right, the narrative is Nintendo releases a logo for Metroid Prime 4. People erupt over this news. It was huge. It was so hype. And people were like, oh my God, the Switch is great. And it's already been great. And there's great things coming. And that wave of excitement over Metroid Prime 4 has been sustained until now. You know, like when we were talking about like, what's next on the docket? Like, we got to be seeing it this year and all that. And granted, it's a disappointment that it's not coming. But again, it seems that at least anecdotally, the overwhelming response is, man, that's a bummer, but take your time. So like, was there a bad result from this? Was there bad press from this?
I mean, like, they've lost presumably millions of dollars.
That's true. But I don't think that the announcement hurt that. You know, they lost the money based on the development not working,
yeah,
not because they announced it 2 years early. I think it's a bit of an embarrassment for them as a company, but it doesn't seem like the fans care that much. Like, they just want the game, and whenever it comes, if it's good, we'll be happy. You know, like, I always go back to that Miyamoto quote where he's like, a bad game is bad forever, but a delayed game eventually gets good, but a bad game is bad forever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think if this game comes out and it delivers, nobody's going to care that it was delayed. You know, guess what else was delayed 2 or 3 times? Breath of the Wild.
I remember. I bought a Wii U for it.
Yeah, me too. But it's like, does anybody remember that when you talk about Breath of the Wild now? When you talk about Breath of the
Wild? Every time.
Are you still salty at the fact that you can manage your inventory on that second screen as well?
Yep. Mate, Wind Waker HD, I just wanted that as the Breath of the Wild, you know, interface. That would have been brilliant.
So I don't know. I personally, I'm actually kind of excited by this news. I respect the hell out of how Nintendo handled the announcement, and I think it's really cool to see Retro returning to the franchise, because they're, you know, like, they made Metroid Prime what it is.
To be fair, there's not many of the original team that worked on the Prime series left there anymore.
No, but you've got the producer there. And I think
that's true,
having him at the helm going, no, this is what a Metroid Prime game is. This is what we shape it to be. This is the kind of the points that we need to hit in order for it to be a Metroid game. Like a Zelda game, for example, you can tell it feels like a Zelda game because it has specific things and points that it hits. Same for Mario.
And I do think one of the potential strengths of that is that even if you don't have the same people there, I bet a lot of the people that do work at Retro grew up playing Prime, and that's why they wanted to work at Retro. I think this is ultimately going to be good news. I think that the game is going to turn out better in the long run for it, and I hope it does, because I started saying this before, but we got sidetracked. I think Metroid is a franchise that has a lot of potential. Because I think if you're a hardcore Nintendo fan, or even if you're just a core gamer, I think a lot of people think of Metroid as one of Nintendo's A-tier franchises, and it really never has been. You know, they've never sold particularly well. Like, Prime sold a lot of copies, but no other Metroid game comes even close to selling the way that something like Mario or even Zelda, you know, which is not as big of a seller as a lot of people like to think either. And this is their shot. Nintendo is at a point right now where, in recent memory, this is the most on top they've ever been. Looking at some of the NPD numbers that came out last week, it's like they had... It's the best-selling console of the year. They had a crazy market share. Smash is the fastest-selling Smash game. Like, they're on fire right now. And people care about Nintendo and are taking Nintendo seriously in a way that they haven't in a while. You know, I would say, like, maybe even since the beginning of the Wii, and maybe even before that.
Yeah, the Wii kind of shattered the image that Nintendo care about serious games for a while.
Yeah. And the Switch brought that back, and the Switch is a huge success story for them. And, like, if they put out a Metroid game that's as good as Odyssey or Breath of the Wild, I think they could really make Metroid a thing.
So here's my question to you. Now we know the game's been scrapped and started over, and the Switch has been out quite a while, do you still think, considering the development time, that it will be a Switch release?
Yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Switch is only going to celebrate its second birthday in March. Mm-hmm. So it's not that old. And I think even if you're conservative about what the Switch's life cycle is, I think that means that it has another solid, like, 3 to maybe even 5 years of life in it. Like, look how long they made the 3DS last.
I thought you were going to say Wii U.
I think it will be a Switch game. Whether by that point we have the rumored revised console or Switch Pro is another matter. But I think it will still come out and play on first-gen Switches.
I think there's a real chance that it's one of the last Switch games, though.
That's a feeling I've got now. It's going to be one of those which is available on Switch, but also comes as a launch title to...
Switch 2.
The Switch 2, yeah. Whatever they've got working on in their development.
The Nintendo Flip! I think that's a pretty good guess. If I were a betting man, it's either going to be a late-gen Switch game, or it's going to be that crossover title that has been Zelda the last two generations.
Yeah, the thing is, Retro Studio are now in a position where they're taking over a game that the development has failed for and not hit Nintendo's targets. So they really need to focus on making sure that it's as good as it can be, the best it can be, to impress Nintendo. Otherwise, they're just following in the footsteps of what Bandai Namco did. So, What Bandai Namco may have done. We don't know if it was them or not.
The pace that Nintendo seems to work at, though, is kind of incredible. they seem to pump out games quicker than any other studio, whether it's because they just work crazy hours or something, I don't know. But Super Smash Bros. Seem to be in development for not that long following the Wii U game.
The thing is, it's when they announce it and when they release it compared to when they start working on the game and when they release it, I think, that makes it seem as though they're developing things quicker. And because they've got huge development teams and multiple development teams, I think that creates the illusion. These games are just, you know, here's a game, bang, now it's announced, bang, here's some gameplay.
Look at Mario Odyssey, for example. That got announced after the Switch was released. They built that specifically for the Switch, unlike Breath of the Wild, which was built for the Wii U and then got ported to the Switch.
Yeah, but I think it's like they were definitely working on that game before the Switch was finalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so apparently Mario Odyssey was in development from 2013.
Okay, so
after Super Mario 3D World.
It's like 4 years.
3-4 years, yeah.
And that would have been their flagship title, and they had multiple studios working on that because 1UP helped with it as well.
That's also like pretty standard for like a AAA game. You know, like a 4 to 6 year development cycle is not uncommon at all.
Yeah, I'm looking at the times between Metroid Prime and Metroid Prime 2, it was 2 years, and the time between Metroid Prime 2 and 3 was 3 years. And that was between generations of consoles.
It's also worth pointing out, though, that I feel like the needle moves when you're talking about a sequel.
Yes.
Because, like, you have an engine, you have models, you have so much, like, groundwork.
That's what Pixel was saying. If we've got those models, we've got that potential engine that you could maybe bring over from Bandai Namco, if that works, and it maybe is just a narrative or gameplay mechanics that are wrong and bad that Retro need to come on and fix. If you've got a lot of that stuff already done,
I do wonder, talking about, you know, game engines, because it was rumored that they were using Unreal Engine 4 over at Bandai Namco for Metroid. I wonder if that was the cause of all this. Maybe it hit its limitations in terms of performance.
Oh, because they wanted to hit the 60.
Because Nintendo, yeah, they wouldn't accept anything lower than 30, and they probably are aiming for 60. And if the engine wasn't capable of hitting that, doing what they wanted it to do, maybe that was kind of the root of why these issues cropped up.
Hmm. It's a possibility. I mean, the biggest Unreal game is Fortnite, and that doesn't come anywhere near 60. Sometimes doesn't even hit 30. So it's a definite possibility. I know that's a different kettle of fish, but
yeah, it's interesting. You know, and I think ultimately, like, the really unfortunate thing is that due to the nature of the way Nintendo handles PR and like the notoriously. Like, video games in general are already a weirdly secretive medium, but, like, Japanese development is even more so, because they just have such a different relationship with the press. The sad thing is we will never know the truth behind this.
Well, I think some things could come out of Retro, though. They're an American studio, so you may hear some, like, things of, yeah, we got the build through from Bandai, and it was shockingly bad, and this was what was wrong with it.
Yeah, that's true. We might learn some of those things, but I don't know that we'll ever know why the decisions were made the way they were. You know, like, why did Nintendo decide to try this experimental development process with Metroid? And, like, what was it that was so wrong? You know, like, we might get little glimpses of it, but, like, I really feel like we'll probably, in the same way that I feel like we'll never really know the truth behind, like, the Kojima Konami story, we'll probably never really know what happened here. It's a shame. I wish that Jason Schreier spoke Japanese, because we'd be able to get it for Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, too.
I hope we find out. I mean, there's several people that could potentially unearth it and dig it out. There's Liam Robertson. He's probably working away. There's the guys over at Digital Foundry that managed to somehow get a build of Shenmue 2 HD remaster that never happened. And it's just like how these things float around, I do not know.
Man, if Liam Robertson can give me a video on Metroid Prime, the unfinished Metroid Prime 4, I will create an altar and sacrifice some goats for him, like, whatever I gotta do, like sleuth it out, man. I want to know this story so badly. It's so interesting.
I wonder how many years it will take for it to surface.
Many, you know, years.
Nintendo are going to cover this up for as long as they can until the new game's released, the new version.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll see anything until after that. Nah.
If you look at the trend for his videos, like, for Liam's at least, right? Like, for the last, like, several years, a lot of them have been, like, about, like, GameCube, PS2 era. So it's, like, I'm thinking there's probably going to be a similar trajectory where, like, in a couple years we'll start getting all of his videos about all the games that never came out on Xbox 360 and PS3 and Wii U, and then next gen, then we'll get this stuff. So I'm thinking a solid like 10 to 20 years if he's still making YouTube videos by then. If this entire digital media thing hasn't swallowed itself by that point, that's when we'll learn the story. So I think that's a good place to wrap up this story for now. Obviously, we will be keeping an eye on this one. We will be talking about Metroid Prime 4 in the future. But if Nintendo is to be believed on this one, it's going to be quite some time before we get another update. So I guess we'll just have to find something else to speculate wildly about. So remember, if you want to let us know what you're thinking about Metroid Prime 4's delay, you can hit us up at potscast@lewpots.com. That's P-O-T-S-C-A-S-T @lewpots.com. Or write into us with, you know, your thoughts on any of our other news stories, games coming out this week, stuff you're playing, questions for the team, whatever you got. It makes it so that we have to put less effort into building the show. So please, write in. And remember, if you want to connect with us around the web, you can hit us up at LootPots on Twitter. You can also visit us at lootpots.com. Hit us up over on YouTube where we've got – you're going to want to go subscribe to our YouTube channel. I know we've been very silent recently, but we are working on some very interesting stuff. Good stuff is coming. So go and be part of the initial wave before it becomes, you know, a household name. Go subscribe to that YouTube channel and, you know, check out some of the stuff we've already done over there. Pixel's got a great video on how you can spot a fake pro controller, which I would highly recommend. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the podcast. We'll see you next week. We love you.